Penny! Penny! Penny!
I'm ready!
Book smash!
But Arbiter friend?
Am I not the captain of this ship?
You're a wizard, Harry.
Shadow Clone Jutsu!
Mr. Messenger.
And the Billboard Music Award goes to...
Pikachu!
BTS!
Winter is coming.
Hello, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
Bye-bye!
Hello, 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 and welcome to Let's Talk Fandoms, a podcast where we talk about all things fandom. Today, I've got Zara Miller in the studio with us. She studied diplomacy at Middlesex University, London, where she developed her artistic talents. Her work in London gave her the confidence to become an author, telling stories to encourage others to believe in themselves. A vivacious blogger, book reviewer, and social media enthusiast, Miller's young adult novel, I Am Cecilia, was created to motivate teenagers to stay true to themselves, dream big, and act bold. Her greatest inspiration for writing comes from her family, both blood and those she has chosen over the years. I am super excited and super happy to have gotten the opportunity to meet Zara Miller and talk with her. And I am so excited to introduce her to the rest of the podcast. So please help me in giving a very warm welcome to Miss Zara Miller.
Hi, Tizita. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the kind introduction. It was very sweet.
I am very excited. I am obsessed with our topic. It is a topic that I have been arguing with many a people and many a friends and family for many years. And I think it's such an important conversation to keep having.
I am so happy to contribute to your fight and be on your side in this one. So let's get into it.
Perfect, perfect. Before we do, I would love to know, how do you describe the term fandom?
I understand fandoms mostly as a group of individuals who come together for their mutual love of a selected art. That's how I got into it. That's how I understand it. I know that over the course of the years, especially when we entered digital era, it has become, I don't want to say straight out negatively influenced, but and neither toxic, not at all. But yes, I have noticed that on Reddit and on these online communities, I've noticed more hate than love. Let's put it that way, which is very unfortunate for me, because not just for me, but like for the entire online community.
Yeah,
because it's not how it started. So hopefully we can turn this ship around.
Yeah, no, definitely. I completely agree. And I think you're absolutely right. I think there's been a lot of negativity in the fandom community in different aspects of fandoms.
Yeah.
And I think when we're able to kind of come together and figure out our similarities and accept people's differences, I think that's when a lot of that negativity and frustration can really kind of like melt away a little bit.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah, for sure.
So how did you get introduced into the fandom world?
Into the fandom world. Well, it was my freshman year of high school. And there was this little TV show called The Vampire Diaries that was very, very popular and was gaining traction, especially entering its second season. And we all became such huge fans back in my school that during the IT class, when the professor was not around, we were secretly streaming it every Friday morning. Because if I remember correctly, they were broadcasting it. The CW was broadcasting it Thursday night, right? So it was available for streaming Friday mornings. And Friday mornings, we had like a double period of IT class. And so we had access to computers. And whenever the IT professor was not around, we would just put it on. And it was the whole thing. It was a jam. It was a very rewarding experience all around. we were fangirling so hard over everything that was happening. So that's how I got introduced into fandoms. Yeah, the Vampire Diaries.
That's amazing. I love that. I remember having those nights sitting on the living room floor. Mm. And we had like a small box TV in the living room. Mm. And my mom would be like cooking dinner or whatever. My brother would be in his own room. And I would just be sitting there watching. So invested and so excited. Yes. I know. Just every Thursday night, just you know, we gotta watch it. It's okay. You can do whatever. It was great. It was a great way for me to, you know, quote unquote, get involved into the series was just to heavily digest it and then go to school and talk about it and discuss it with friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've always been a fan of the books. So when I learned that CW was going to pick it up and make a TV show out of it, I was really excited. And I loved it, you know, I did. Like, I'd be lying if I said I didn't like it or it wasn't good. It was, so.
Yeah. So today in our episode, Zara and I are actually talking about books versus television shows versus their movies. Mm-hmm. And I guess, why is it, or who decides, and why do they decide to remove some things and change some things and completely distort some things if necessary for the sheer pleasure of the viewing audience.
Yeah.
And I think the best one to start with would be the Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do it.
There were some characters that were just full out removed from the books.
Yeah. And like Lena's friend, Meredith.
Thank you. Literally what I was going to say. I think like the one that was the most significant to my brain was Meredith. Where did she go?
She disappeared into the void of TV adaptations. So, listen, I never went to film school, so I don't know what they teach directors and whether they even have a department where they teach. Listen, you're probably going to encounter projects that it will require for you to know the language of books as well, not just the film language. So I have no idea whether they teach directors how to adapt stuff. So I don't want to be too harsh on them, but
you're very kind.
But just like authors need to know the language of the spoken word, film directors or just directors in general, they need to know film language. And when those two worlds clash, often, more than not, it's a hit or miss situation because not every director has the skill to remove stuff from the books that would hurt the TV adaptation, since it's a completely different art. There are stuff that just needs to be removed because it doesn't translate well on screen. And then there are stuff that you need to keep because if you don't, the plot, the story kind of falls apart. That's what you see with, that's what happened with the Percy Jackson adaptation, for example. So again, I don't know, but I think that The Vampire Diaries did pretty well in the at least in the first three seasons.
Okay.
Then it kind of fell apart.
Yeah. I think I dropped off halfway through season four.
They lost the plot.
I mean, the plot was just gone. And
they lost the plot.
It got to the point where people were dying and then coming back. And then and then things were happening to different characters that were happening to other characters from the book. And it was very crazy. It reminded me a lot of towards the ending of Mortal Instruments, when a lot of kind of these ending up, wrapping up plots were happening to different characters from in the
book. All at once? Yeah, exactly.
Which was like super confusing to me, and I didn't understand why.
Yeah, exactly. just to give a background in case your listeners don't know this. Yeah, because it's not, you know, widely known, especially because the TV show gained so much traction, no one really cared mm-hmm. about the books or the author anymore, or why. But the reason why the plot kind of fell apart, the early signs were always there. So,
yeah.
The thing is with the Vampire Diaries, it's a product, the books, I mean, the story, it's a product of a book packaging. Book packaging is what happens when basically a publisher, it mostly happens in the nonfiction world, but it is sometimes happened in fiction when the publisher, some publishers want to just make a quick buck. So they go to a third party book packaging company and they basically say, we want a vampire fantasy book, whatever, book series. And they hire writers. They literally hire writers just for that.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. HarperCollins went to a third-party book packaging company, Alloy Entertainment. And Alloy Entertainment hired L.J. Smith and told her nothing except for we want a young adult book series, fantasy book series. So this is entirely her, L.J. Smith's brainchild.
Yeah.
But out of the six, or I'm not sure how many books there are, I think six, out of the six books, she only wrote three because Alloy Entertainment fired her after they learned that she wanted for Elena to end up with Damon.
Yes.
And they were not fans of that. They wanted Elena to end up with Stefan, so they fired her.
Yes.
So who even wrote the rest of the three books? We don't know. So that's the book story. And then what happened, since she sold it, basically she sold the licensing rights to Alloy Entertainment, when CW picked it up, she had no say in what the TV was adapting. That's the first, I mean, that's the first sign.
Yep.
You know, like a red flag. And as far as the TV series goes, they read the synopsis perhaps, and they loosely based it on the synopsis. And that's, I mean, for only the first season, the rest doesn't pertain to the books at all.
Right.
So, That's the first red flag. The second red flag is in TV, as I mean, at least to my knowledge, to the best of my knowledge, TV showrunners and screenwriters, they switch all the time, right? The teams of writers, they rotate all the time. So if you have inconsistent writing in the TV series, that's because there are different brains behind every episode, sometimes,
exactly.
I mean, every season, sometimes every episode. So, yeah, I feel like they lost the plot sometime around season three.
That's... yeah, and I will say, it's interesting. It's interesting to hear that, because I didn't know that they went to a third party publishing house, had someone else kind of really fully develop this story,
then
fire.
Yeah, book packaging company, yeah.
Yeah.
Alloy Entertainment isn't even a publisher there. They're a book packaging company.
Oh.
So when you go to Barnes & Noble and you see these, I don't know, like a collection of photographies,
mm-hmm.
that's probably a product of a book packaging company.
Okay.
So they hire photographers, they hire someone who can do the designs, and they just scrap it together for a quick profit. But it's not your typical book publishing process at all. It's book packaging. And Alloy Entertainment is specializing in the young adult series. They are behind Gossip Girl, for example.
Right.
Pretty Little Liars as well. Nancy Drew is a product of book packaging, for example. I'm not sure if that, I don't think that that's Alloy Entertainment's property, but Nancy Drew is also a product of book packaging. So yeah, that's how it is. When it comes to characters, what happened, I think, is the center at least for me, the center, the heart of the show was Elena.
Yes, agree.
At least, I mean, yeah, you could argue that it was the relationship between the brothers, true, but she was like the glue that kind of...
Right.
You know what I mean? So when you regret developing the glue of the show, it kind of falls apart. And what happened with Elena, what I noticed was that she kind of started, it was very heavily, very, very heavily... repeated like all the time in almost every episode that Elena had a survivor's guilt.
Right. Yes.
But they never resolved it, did they?
Thank you.
She just turned into a vampire.
There were so many open plots that were left open.
Yeah.
Which was very, very interesting to me. That I just didn't understand. So there was, in the book, there was never any talk, and maybe I'm wrong because I read it many, many years ago, mm-hmm. but I don't remember there ever being any talk about a doppelganger.
No.
I just remember that she kind of resembled Catherine in slight appearance, but more importantly in personality.
Mm-hmm.
Because
exactly. That's a huge change, right?
Yeah.
Because Elena in the books is the popular girl who is kind of an asshole to everyone.
Yup.
She's very superficial.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't really care about anything but her image.
Exactly.
And in the TV series, she's the exact... And in the books, Catherine is very much the same.
Exactly.
She's a very selfish, self-centered person who just doesn't care about anything but herself.
Right.
In the TV series, they changed it. They just implied that before the accident, Elena was kind of self-centered and selfish. But after that, they really emphasized her compassion and how kind she was.
Yeah.
All fine, but it never really went anywhere, did it?
But like even, because you mentioned that like even before the accident... They kind of mentioned slightly how she was kind of like the book.
They literally repeat all the time that she used to be fun before the accident.
Right.
I don't know what that was supposed to mean. Fun, like,
exactly.
Now she's the sad person who doesn't want to go to parties,
who is
doesn't
not fun.
Popularity
yeah.
because she has a survivor's guilt syndrome, which is completely fine. I think it's a very heavy plot
yes.
for a fantasy show of this kind,
yes.
which is it's by design supposed to be superficial. So they introduced this, they introduced a storyline that needs to be resolved, and they never resolved it. So
it also just like needed to be fleshed out because although it was something that like maybe Bonnie and Caroline slightly talked about, it was really never anything that her aunt talked about or her brother in the show talked about. It was nothing that her teachers mentioned about her, you know, her grades or her attending school. It was very interesting just how much of the main character's personality was changed.
Exactly.
It was wild to me. I mean,
it was changed, and I think it was to Elena's detriment.
Same,
because in the books, it just makes sense. Yes, she's superficial, but that's kind of the point. So every decision she makes in the books makes perfect sense, and there's a little bit of character growth as well.
Yep.
When she becomes a vampire, when she falls in love, she kind of starts caring more about her family. And it's just the progression, at least in the first three books, that makes sense.
Yep.
It's better. But here, she starts as plagued by guilt teenager.
Yeah.
They never resolve it. Like the biggest thing that defines her right from the start. They never resolve it. She becomes a vampire by the end of season three, and it kind of throw her into a completely new arc.
Uh-huh.
Without resolving the first one. But if you notice, like, Elena is kind of, is the kind of vampire. She's the same kind of vampire as when she was a human. She just kind of
bland.
Yeah, she's bland. She lays in the middle, like in the middle of a street with this blank expression. And because that survivor's guilt is always within her, and they never resolve it. There was that was such a huge opportunity by the end of season three. They even write the same plot as they with which they started the series, which is the accident, right? So they throw her into the same situation, and instead of just letting her die, or I don't know, just letting it resolve within her that yes, I deserve to live.
Yeah.
It's not, it's just a, you know, I was saved for a reason. I deserve to live. I deserve to be happy.
Yeah.
They just throw her into this vampire life. And again, she's this bland person who just doesn't feel, you know, she just doesn't have the will to live.
I will say, in my research and kind of digging on the show, I did learn there was an article done with Nina Dobrev.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, Nina Dobrev, yeah.
And it talks about her and her decision why she left the show in season six.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was reading it, and it was kind of interesting because she had talked a lot about how, you know, even from the start, I kind of knew and thought that I was going to have, or that that Elena was going to be kind of a six season character.
Yeah.
And kind of have her arc there. And I found it interesting the way that they wrote her character off. I really didn't like it. And then the fact that they continued for two more seasons. I found it very, very strange.
It was weird.
And it seemed almost it seemed pretty in line with the television Elena, but it was completely off from the book Elena, and sacrificing herself and her own life for her best friend Bonnie, and then they left it open to where she could potentially come back. It was all just not what I was wanting.
No. Not at all. I mean, oh God, Elena. So, like I said, they read a synopsis of the book. Mm-hmm. They based the storyline, maybe the first season, off of the books, and then that's it. It was completely up to the showrunners to decide where the show was going to go from there. They kept some of the characters, like Klaus, into the later seasons, but again, they made him into this really charismatic British person.
Yeah,
he really wasn't. He was a monster, and that was it. He was a demon or of some sort. It's just not a good dude. And I'm not saying they portrayed him as good, but this weird, I don't know what this new trend is, and you can notice it in Disney projects as well recently. They try to make a villain sympathetic.
Yeah.
And they don't understand the difference between giving a villain a motivation and making him sympathetic.
Yeah.
We don't have to feel sympathy for the villain in order to understand why he's doing what he's doing.
Exactly.
And I rarely see a story where this is understood. It's either the Marvel project where villain is evil for the sake of being evil.
Yep.
Or the Disney projects where they turn villain into a sympathetic character that you wanna, or they want you to root for it, for them. I just don't understand. And I think that because it's a TV show, obviously they hired a very charismatic actor, and I don't think they even expected Klaus to be so popular. He got his own spinoff show, right?
Right.
And I mean, when they introduced the original family into the TV, into the TVD, they seem just way more interesting than anything that happened on The Vampire Diaries. So it kind of it made sense to me that they would get their own show, but they completely messed it up. I did not like the originals at all. But back to my original point, Klaus. Right? So...
Oh, Klaus.
First it was Elena, and then it was Klaus.
Oh, God.
So... yeah, I really like the third season because when they introduced, they introduced him in the second season, but you didn't really know what was up with him.
Right.
And then the third season, they did it really, really, it was well done when they showed that his motivation for doing all of this is because he doesn't want to be alone.
Yes.
Great.
I agree.
Amazing. That's where it needed to end. That's it. That's good enough motivation for a villain. I don't want to be alone. I want a tribe. I want a soul family. I want an army that I can command to my every whim. That's, you don't need to go any further, but it just kept going and going. And he, then they gave him like a love triangle with and with that other world, and I'm like, what the hell are you people doing? This is not how you do a villain. You just don't, because then he's not a villain anymore, he's not a threat anymore, and lo and behold, they wrote him off because he became too good. He basically was kind of, by the end of season four, he was on the good guys team. So that's not, this was a trend in The Vampire Diaries. They turned villains into good people, and they didn't know what to do with them. So they either gave them a new show, or they were just hanging around doing random lines in the episodes. They just didn't know what to do with them, because the resolution, when you do this kind of story, the resolution is either you kill a villain, or you defeat him, and you just defeat him, or he defeats the team good. Like that's fine as well, right?
Yeah.
If Klaus won and everybody died, whatever, that would have been still better than what they did, right?
Yeah. So, and I will say, I felt a lot of that frustration that you have about the character of Klaus. I felt that way a lot with Damon, where in the books, he is bad, right? Like he is that stereotypical bad boy.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Is brooding and angry and like wants to create trouble.
Yeah.
And he is that way pretty much until the end. I mean, granted, he does have, you know, a thing with Bonnie.
True.
But even then, he's still like, he's
true to himself. Guns.
Yes, exactly.
True to himself. That's who he is, right?
And in the show, you saw like this incredibly soft side that was so soft that was just not his character anymore.
I completely agree with you, and it just opens up a new realm of shit. Because let me explain. So first of all, Damon borderline had schizophrenia in this show in the later seasons.
Yes.
Because they try to portray it as sort of he was torn between his love for Elena and his like being himself. But like no, girl. That's no. And like pertaining to Damon and the Salvatore brothers, in the books they were Italian, right?
Thank you.
They were much older. They were Italian, and the way they spoke and everything, it just it was obvious that they were from Europe. It was obvious that they were from another time, and the TV series brothers, they turned them into a slave owning. pair of Damon even fought in the Confederate Army, and when it was like season one, episode six, and when I saw it, I was like, dude, you don't want to touch this.
Exactly.
In a fantasy vampire series on the CW, you don't want to go there because right? You would create a realm of shit for yourself. And I was completely right, because when I first saw the episode, I was like, okay, this is kind of interesting, but you are treading on a very fine line. And if you don't address this, if you don't do this properly, it's not going to be good.
No.
But I was willing, you know, I was like willing to give them a chance. But right. Lo and behold, there isn't any mention of racism whatsoever. They kind of suggest the classist society, like it's kind of classist, but, and they live in freaking Virginia. So it's just, so you just wait for all these things to be resolved. For like, they briefly address that Damon was not exactly on board with fighting for the South in season right. 7. There was like one episode where he was like, I knew it was wrong, but I wanted to, I don't know, satisfy my father's wishes. I don't know what he even said, but up until that point, it was Stefan, I think, even said, his younger brother even said in one episode, I've always wanted to be like you, you know? I looked up to you, a son fighting in the army, trying to... I was like, where are you going? Just stop. Like,
what the heck?
Anytime, I was like, anytime you open your mouth, it makes your dumpster fire of a show self-apply gasoline. Ugh. Stop it. So, obviously... It's just so, and that's just one storyline. And they opened up a vein of bleeding bullshit that just never got resolved. And that's just one problem that they changed the background of the Salvators.
Yeah, and I think with changing the initial like heritage of the Salvatore brothers, they also changed the physical appearance of them mm-hmm. Pretty drastically. I know with like their eye color, their hair color, like their complexion, mm-hmm. a lot of it was changed. And I think it was a little jarring for me to see these, blue eyed or even black eyed mm-hmm. in Damon's case, which was strange to me.
Yeah.
With very dark hair and very light pale skin, it was very interesting because it wasn't at all how I had imagined them from the book as being Italian men.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I remember when Elena was cast, they cast Nina Dobrev. Mm-hmm. I know that there was a huge backlash that she didn't have blonde hair and eyes. I know that. Honestly. When I first heard it, I was like, if she's going to do a good enough of a job, it's fine. Honestly, it's fine. And she did. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
With what they gave her, she was fantastic. So I totally believed that she was two different people when she played Catherine and when she played Elena.
Same.
She was fantastic. When they gave her good material, like when her brother died, season 4, and there was this huge scene when she had a meltdown, I was like, I believe you. She did a fantastic job.
Yes.
But I understand where you're coming from. For me, it wasn't a huge issue because, you know, it's a TV adaptation, and sometimes you just don't find the actors who look right for the role. They may look right for the role, but they don't have talent. And honestly, this is the CW we're talking about, right?
Yes.
So for the CW, I think that overall the cast was fantastic. They were
same.
For the most part, they were fantastic actors. I believed it. I believed every emotional through line they gave us.
Same.
But
same.
This ending season 3, they lost the plot. that's it. And it's just when the characters are already flimsy, you rely on the plot to move you forward. But if you have flimsy characters and you lose the plot, it's going to be a dumpster fire of a show. That's what happened. And they had to raise the stakes every season, more and more villains. And they just didn't know how. That's why I think that every TV series should end season three or season four.
I agree.
At most, because then it just drags on. And you respect relationships, you recycle the plot line, and it's not good.
I completely agree. I think a TV show that really kind of stomps the show into the ground to the point where it is just, at least for me, it was very unpalatable. Supernatural.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Like,
I was a diehard.
They are still going, aren't they? Or not?
No. They're officially done.
Okay.
Officially done.
Okay.
But I used to be a diehard Supernatural fan. And I think I got to season 8. I think it was either 7 or 8 whenever both Dean and Sam kind of part ways. And Dean ends up moving in with this girl who has this kid and is like living his life. And I was like, great, it's the end. Beautiful. Sam does his own thing, goes on, you know, adventures. And so I stopped watching because I thought that's the end. And then I think it was like 4 years later, I was in college and I was talking to someone about it. And they're like, there are still episodes going.
You're still going.
I thought we wrapped everything up. And now, I mean, throughout college, I mean, I just heard about, you know, after season 10 or 11, it just became fan service. And they were literally just keeping it going because of the fans and because
and
of
milking the money,
milking
the money. That's the problem. There's the fine line between we want to make money, but we still want to make good art. And Hollywood just doesn't get it. There rarely is a project where they're like, okay, we've done a good job with the art. We made a decent money. Let's move on to other projects. Right. No. Let's milk this cow until and again I hate to return to Marvel, but again, they are the key example.
Yeah.
It was fun, and then after movie 885, I was like, where are they going with this?
Yeah.
And it's a cash grab. I'm not saying that those movies are not entertaining or whatever. And I've heard that the WandaVision series on Disney Plus, that it was, I mean, people say that it had like depth or something to it, which like, fine. I mean, I didn't watch it, but
same.
Where are you going with this?
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like there is a moment when it comes to a specific show or book or kind of entertainment where you have to put a cap on it. Like, you have to put an ending to it. And not ending a story allows viewers and the audience to then poke holes in what is going on and allows people to outgrow kind of what is happening. And I feel like you're just kind of, like you mentioned, doing it for the money and less for the audience appeal and excitement. And I think that's when it gets very frustrating for people, especially the audience, especially for like diehard fans. I think it gets very frustrating when it gets to the point where you are now like unhappy or unwanting to continue with it.
That's one thing.
Like it's been like soured.
Yes, I agree completely. And that's one thing. And the other thing is, dude, it kills the art.
Yeah.
It kills the art completely. There's no shortage of talented screenwriters, writers, designer, whatever you need to create a good movie, a good TV show, a good book, whatever. So why do they keep recycling their own ideas? Because money, right?
Yeah.
So It also, to come back to my original point, the book packaging, right? So they take away authors' rights and they make a dumpster fire of a TV show out of it, or a dumpster fire of a movie out of it, like Percy Jackson or...
Oh.
I mean...
God, so bad.
So people, like people sometimes, less now than before, but they sometimes ask me, why did you choose a hybrid publisher like New Degree Press? And before I used to say, you know, they chose me, first of all.
Right.
And I said yes, because all the rights, I retain all the rights to my work,
right,
while still getting a support from like the entire publishing support team of editors, designers. I have all that to my liking, to my needs, everything is there, but they don't keep the rights to my book.
Right.
So that's why, because I don't want anyone to turn my work into a cash grab.
Yeah.
And if they do, they would have to come to me.
Right. It would have to be under your terms. Yes.
Exactly. So if I want to be a consultant, we can make that deal. We can make that agreement. Right. Listen, I will sell you the rights to turn my book into a movie or whatever you want to do with it. But yeah, I will be a consultant on that, on the screenwriting or whatever.
Right.
It's just it gives you so much freedom. And with everything that's going on, with the changes that the book industry is going through right now, especially with what Barnes & Noble is doing, which is, I mean, kudos to them. The publishers will no longer be able to purchase placement on the bookshelves, basically.
Ooh.
They will let authors, so they will turn it more into like an indie store where authors will have the option to call them personally and let their books be, you know, on display, which is amazing.
That's amazing.
And it's what New Degree Press has been doing for some time now. So I'm very proud of my New Degree Press fam for being so innovative, and I'm also proud of Barnes & Noble for doing this, because it will create ripples through the industry.
Yes.
Good change. It's a good change. It's a very good change moving forward. So basically what we're talking about is that LJ Smith lost the rights to her books, lost the rights to her brainchild, which, by the way, is genius, right?
Yes.
The books are like this, the emotional through line and just the emotional core of the books is so powerful, even though it's wrapped in young adult fantasy series. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
And she lost the rights to her work, and they turned it into this bizarre product. And I was heartbroken, you know. I was heartbroken, and yeah. So
don't forget, Zara's book that she is talking about is called I Am Cecilia.
I Am Cecilia, yes, I Am Cecilia. And we are, yeah, this is a publishing week for me.
Yes.
So yeah, it will be available very soon in Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and if you want to purchase an ebook, then it's going to be on Kobo as well. It's also a young adult fiction, but it's not fantasy. It's more, I would say, romance. I would categorize it as romance, but we talk about family.
Perfect.
In the book, and identity and self-discovery and staying true to yourself. So if you're a fan of romance, if you're a fan of that kind of story where the main heroine is not really that likable, but you still want to root for her, then this is the book for you.
Definitely check it out by Zara Miller.
Thanks, Dizita.
Okay, let's talk about one of the biggest changes, maybe not changes, but one of the biggest jaw-dropping things to me when it came to Vampire Diaries.
Let's do this.
The fact that there were no angels.
Mm.
What happened to all the angels? I was so confused when I was watching the show, and I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and Elena never discovered or became half angel.
Yeah.
And it was so shocking and jaw-dropping to me, because at the time when I read the book, mm-hmm. it was the first time that I was reading about angels in a non like biblical sense.
Mm-hmm. True.
It was very cool, and it was very exciting.
Cool. Yes.
And I thought it would be so cool to kind of see it on the television and see how they were going to do it. Because I read the books before I knew about Supernatural and before it was on the CW.
Absolutely.
So I wasn't aware of, you know, how they were going to be incorporating angels, and the book did it so well. And
yeah. Oh, Jason is the genius. Yeah, oh. She did. Yeah.
Yeah, so great.
I mean, girl. It got lost in a TV hell adaptation. I mean, it lost in a TV hell. The angels have dropped into a TV hell oblivion. Like you said, I was raised Catholic. I don't subscribe to it anymore, but I was raised that way. So absolutely, angels were a thing in the household back when I was growing up. So when I read the books, I was fairly young and I read it and I was fascinated. I was like, oh my God.
Yes.
This is real. This is done in a completely new way. It's amazing. And like you said, it fascinated me as a girl who only knew angels from the Bible.
Right.
So I was wondering when they announced they were going to do a TV show, whether they were going to do anything with that.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So it's not like it's a missed opportunity. It's not like the source material didn't give you enough ideas. They just decided not to go with it and came up with more and more ridiculous stories. I mean, I didn't watch season 8, but I heard that there were sirens and
what?
I heard that it was a missed opportunity as well, because sirens are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like a Halloween monster, right? So it just makes sense that a sirens would be in the TV show like The Vampire Diaries. And I didn't watch it, but I heard from the online communities that was a botched job as well. Oh. That they didn't do much of anything. They just bathe in pools. literally just swimming around in random pools because they like water. And their, what was it, Jesus Christ? Their weakness was like a tuning fork or something.
Yes. Oh, it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know. So instead of, let's say, giving Elena her resolution of a survivor's guilt by, I don't know, giving her a plot line where she would become an angel and, you know, it would make sense for the TV Elena even more, because exactly. The book Elena was a selfish asshole and the TV Elena was she was literally painted as an angel. I mean,
yes,
good God, people, it's right there. So it would make even more sense for the TV Elena to become an angel, since she was an angel from the beginning in the eyes of Stefan and the whole town of Mystic Falls. So
I think another plot that to me really dropped the ball was how important, at least how I interpreted, how important Elena's journal was.
Yeah.
In specifically when it came to Elena and Caroline's friendship in the book.
Yeah.
Because the journal was the entire catalyst that blew everything up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for those who haven't read the book, basically Caroline learns about the vampires through Elena's journal.
Yes.
And then like blackmails and threatens basically Elena to like, you know, do things or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Blow
up the cover of
Supernatural
and kind of world.
Tell her mom about it and
you
know, explain it to everyone.
Yeah.
Whereas in the TV show, I think it's maybe the first, I know it's definitely the first episode, but maybe even the first few episodes that we get maybe some journal action, a little bit of where Elena is writing in her journal, kind of narrating a little bit. We get a little
bit of true. Mostly Stefan. Mostly when it comes to journaling, Elena journals like maybe in the first episode that she kind of abandons it. But I know that Stefan's diaries are kind of the focus of the diaries aspect of the Vampire Diaries. And even after season 3, they abandon it because Stefan spends most of his time dealing with with an addiction that is, I don't know, an equivalent of being an alcoholic.
I kind of almost attributed it as being like a heroin addict.
Yeah.
Because it became so intense.
It becomes so intense that he rips people's heads off. He's just unable to control himself. And it's kind of portrayed as I understood it as an alcoholic addiction, but true, it can be a heroin addiction as well. Yeah. I mean, whatever you wanna,
whatever addiction is
whatever addiction. Jesus. So this is another hell for me. Hell of a plot line for me, because Stefan is portrayed as this all around good guy, and his only fault is his addiction. And then Damon is the other way around. He's an all around bad guy, and his only good, I don't know, character feature or whatever is his love for Elena. And I mean, it's not what it is in the books at all. Both brothers have, I fell in love. What did it for me when it comes to the Vampire Diaries books, of course, is the not duality, but the multi-dimensionality of the characters, right? Honestly, I think that the only one-dimensional character was Elena. Like, everyone else was so fleshed out in the books, especially the side characters. I mean, Elena as well, but it's just, you have to wait for it, right? But at the you have to wait for her character growth and for everything to happen to her.
Yeah.
What did it for me, like I said, was that there wasn't, it was never about good versus evil.
Mm-hmm.
The lines were blurred, and that spoke to me, because that's how it is in real life as well. You don't meet just good people or only bad people.
Right.
All of us have this large spectrum of a personality. And it just happens in real life like that. And that element of keeping the things grounded, even in fantasy, is what connects you to the story, right? It's important to tell stories, for lack of a better word, not in a garbage way, because it helps us deal with real life, right? We saw fictional characters deal with fictional problems.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see them deal with it, we take something from it.
Yeah.
And it helps us to deal with real problems.
Yeah.
But when you portray it the way it is often portrayed, this is the good brother and this is the bad brother. Oh, but they're not just good. This one is an alcoholic, air quotes. And that one, he's not just bad because he loves this one girl. It's just, Jesus. And it's not how it was done in the books.
Yeah.
Damon, like you said, he was the typical bad boy, but he was a gentleman.
Exactly.
He had love for Bonnie, not just Elena.
Yep.
He took a liking to Alaric and even Meredith. They just got along with the whole, and Stefan, on the other hand, it wasn't just a good guy.
Right.
Sometimes he was so annoying.
Thank you.
Jesus Christ, he was so annoying sometimes. But he was this really all-around sweet guy.
Yes.
But he could be annoying as hell. He didn't just have this one thing where if he turned, I mean, I don't remember, maybe you can help me with this, because I don't remember how it was done in the books, but did they have that emotional switch that they...
I was going to ask you similarly, because I don't remember...
I don't remember.
In the book,
I don't think
them
so.
Talking about the innate ability to turn off your emotions.
Yes.
That was the craziest thing I've ever heard. And then it drove the plot for the show for 8 episodes, where it was kind of quote unquote okay for Stefan to be mean,
raging maniac because it wasn't him, because he had his emotional. Right. So,
which was insane. I mean,
much like any other topic they opened up, it was a vein of bullshit. And it's a plot device. The emotional switch is a plot device. I think it's a terrible idea.
Same.
It's a terrible idea because it becomes a plot device and it just erases the finesse of storytelling.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, let's turn Stefan into a bad guy randomly when we need to kill off some characters because, you know, and how do we do it? Well, what if he, since Stefan is a good guy, what if he, for some reason, switched off and the problem is that for all the plot lines that they never resolved, this should have been the one that they never resolved because they just kept going and going and it was there for the entirety of the show and it just became more and more ridiculous. And
how do you come back from that? That's my thing. The biggest thing I never understood was, I guess, when Stefan quote unquote turned his emotions back on or did whatever, it then became him being super guilty or feeling super guilty and, you know, down on himself about the things that he did, specifically to Elena.
Yeah.
And then Elena, like, being okay with it because she stated that it, like, wasn't him.
It wasn't him,
It was just, it was so toxic and so gross. And then it, like, didn't make any sense.
At any time, it became a plot device. Anytime they needed someone to become their worst selves, they... And I, someone even told me, like I said, I didn't watch season 8, so I don't know. But someone told me that season 8, when Damon switched off his humanity because they needed him to do atrocious things again, and he was just not at
the
vampire anymore. Yep. They had him switch off his humanity. And someone told me that there was a line where Caroline was just so over it. Where she was like, just go, Damon. and my friend told me she was speaking for the entire fandom. She was speaking for the entire world in that it was as if the showrunners were so over it that they just literally wrote it into the script that everyone was so over, like, this is not a surprise anymore. Just everyone is over the humanity switch. I don't know who came up with that, but boy, was it a bad idea.
Oh, so bad. So bad.
Because they could have done it easily because when vampires are already addicted to blood, right?
Right.
So they could have easily done it without the humanity switch, right?
Exactly.
So when Klaus made Stefan go with him and season 2, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not sure which episode it was. Maybe it was in season 3 when he made him switch his humanity off. Like, it could have been done differently because...
Yeah.
Just Stefan is all... If they wanted to write Stefan as an addict, they could have done it without him switching his
humanity. So many different ways. Yeah. And that's what was so disappointing.
Because, the thing is, they implied that he couldn't kill without switching his humanity off because it would have destroyed him otherwise. So, but it's contradictory, isn't it? When he's an addict, he can't help himself either way. So why? it's bizarre. It's bizarre. I don't know where it came from. It's not in the books. I don't know whose idea it was. It was a horrible idea. It didn't make any sense. And they stuck to it. And they used it as a plot device. So hard. All the time. I think that the only person who never switched her humanity off was Catherine. She even said season 4, I think that she never switches it off because she just deals with it. That's not how you live.
Right.
And I'm like, great.
Thank you.
Can you teach this lesson to everyone, please? It's just not how you deal with life. So basically the worst character on the show, because she was portrayed as this like even Klaus had more redeemable qualities about him than Catherine. They just turned her into a cartoonish villain. And so the most atrocious, abominable character on the show said the most logical thing.
Yes.
Not just logical, but like most, I want to say empathetic.
Yeah, and like impactful.
Yeah, impactful, empathetic, and is just all around. That was the line for me. That was the line that did it for me.
Yeah.
When it comes to the Vampire Diaries, I stopped watching after I want to say season four. Yeah, season four. Because when she said that, I was like, yeah. So.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
So you are the worst person on the show, character. Like they turned, like literally turned into a cartoonish villain again, made her a plot device instead mm-hmm. of. They never knew what to do with Catherine after season two. I think.
Yeah.
When she lost any purpose she had, plot wise, so she was just kind of hanging around, you know, came in when they needed her to came in, and then she drops this bomb.
Right.
And they didn't make any fuss around, like, there was no, you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't any fuss around it, but it was such a huge thing that she said, at least for me. It was like, yeah, that's kind of how life works. We can't turn off our humanity.
Exactly. Yep. Gotta live with our decisions.
Yeah, exactly. And they just, you know, shrug it off. I don't know.
God.
I was like, okay, I'm done with the Vampire Diaries.
So something I would love to know is, what kind of fandoms are you interested in now? Or what are some things that you're watching that you would recommend to our listeners?
I am a huge fan of fantasy. As you might know, since yes. we discussed, both of the series were from a fantasy genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really love the TV adaptation of Shadow and Bone that is currently on Netflix. Yes. I read the first two books. And when they announced that they would do a TV adaptation, I was like, okay, let's see if this is another Vampire Diaries or another Shadowhunters.
Yeah.
And it's really good. In some parts, I think is even better than the books. They really, they struck the right chord with me.
Oh, good.
They improved the main heroine character a lot, because in the books, Alina Starkov was just such a downer, dude.
Oh, no.
It's like, it's fine. It's fine to have a character like that. But since you're in her head, sometimes, dude, she was such a downer that it downright. That's why I read only the first two books, because I was like, Jesus, is she ever going to come back from this depression or whatever she's going through? Because she's just such a downer. They improved her character a lot. She's way more likable. She's way more action oriented. She knows what she wants far more and better than in the books. So
nice.
And the trio, the Kaz's gang, Inez, Jesper, and Kaz's gang, they kind of hold the show together. But there's like 8 episodes. I'm not sure if the season 2 is coming, but it's really well done. And ooh, what surprises me as the creator of the show, the showrunner, is the guy behind the 2017 Mummy adaptation with Tom Cruise.
Really?
So that was a disaster of a movie. And apparently, poor guy, we dragged him through mud, and apparently it wasn't his fault, because he's capable of adapting.
Yeah.
Very well. And he translated the books onto a screen. He picked extremely talented, likable actors. Like, everyone I saw on screen was like, Jesus, this is good.
Yeah.
I like this. So, if you haven't watched it yet, dear to Zeta's listeners, please go and watch. Please go and watch it. It's very enjoyable, and yeah, I binge watched it in one day, and I loved it. I loved it. I'm telling you, it's even better than the books.
Last night I watched the first episode, and it is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't already 1 a.m., I would have continued. But I mean, it is really good, and it is number one on Netflix in America, so definitely it'll be easy to find. So good. But like Zara and I always recommend, definitely read the book as well. Obviously, it's going to give you a lot more information, a lot more depth about the story and the characters and the plots.
But
definitely check out the show. It is fantastic.
It is fantastic, from the cinematography to costumes to actors to the structure of the story. They removed things that didn't make sense for me in the books, or at least I felt like they were dragging a little bit. But overall, like, it's a fantastic adaptation of a very good book. It's not my Shadow and Bone, the Grisha series, it's not my favorite book ever. That's true. But the TV series is fantastic. Chef's kiss, 10 out of 10. Amazing. Yes. It's amazing. So, yeah.
Are there any other books to movies or books to television shows that you would recommend?
That is currently running, or
either currently or from the past? I know one very popular that is a favorite of mine is, I highly always recommend reading the Harry Potter novels.
Oh, of course.
So good. They give you so much more information. They are so fantastic. And the movies are great after you get past the second one. They're really, really great.
For sure. But Harry Potter, you know, is really well known. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. Do you have, for your listeners or for me, something that is maybe lesser known, like a hidden gem?
Well, a book series that I keep recommending, it hasn't been made into anything yet, but if you haven't yet read The Lunar Chronicles,
no,
it is four books, and then there is like a half book, but it's all, the author is Stephanie Myers.
Okay.
And each book kind of gives a different kind of twist on a fairy tale. But yeah, so the first book is called Cinder, and it follows this girl who is half human and half like AI mechanic.
Okay.
And it's great. It's great. It's about, like, the world that she is in is currently under a global pandemic.
Okay.
And there is a plague that is killing a lot of her people.
So very contemporary.
Yes. But it's great. It's great. I don't want to give too much away, but there are four books in the series. Okay. Really, really great. I've been listening, or I had been listening to it on Audible, and then finally got the books, and they are fantastic. So that's a book series I would recommend. I will say one that I would not recommend would be Aragon.
Okay.
A great book series, terrible movie.
Okay.
I do not recommend the movie. It gives a lot of inconsistencies.
Okay.
So there's that.
There's that. Okay. Perfect. I love it.
Yeah. So where can our listeners find you?
Right. So you can find me on Instagram at Zara Miller Author, or on LinkedIn, which surprisingly I am more active on. It's my favorite platform. Just type in my name, Zara Miller, and you can find me there. I am working on launching a website very soon, because you just need a website, don't you, as an author especially. So I'm working on that as well. But for now, I am very active on social media. Try to be on Instagram, on LinkedIn for sure. I write for the Teen Magazine as well. So if you're interested in culture, relationships, anything that is that has to do with society, definitely check out the Teen Magazine website. I have an author profile there. Check out my articles. And yeah, for now, that's it, probably.
Well, Zara, I definitely want to thank you for being on the podcast. It has been a blast talking with you about all the inconsistencies of Tobucks that were turned into TV shows. They're so frustrating.
No, thank you for having me, Tazita. It's just the most wonderful time.
I cannot wait, and I really hope that I get to have you back on the podcast to talk another topic where we get to be angry and frustrated.
Anytime. Let's do it.
Thank you all so much for listening to my very first podcast. Let's Talk Fandoms is produced by Tazita Gant, created by Tazita Gant, edited by Tazita Gant, hosted by Tazita Gant, cover art done by Psych A Relic on Instagram. Intro music done by Riri Retro, also on Instagram. You can find all of their links in the description of this podcast on each episode. Remember to keep talking fandoms with us, along with everyone else you know. You can find Let's Talk Fandoms Podcast on Instagram and Fandoms Podcast on Twitter. We would love to hear your feedback by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and any other place you are able.